everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Ruby for All. Julie, I missed your face. What is up?
I'm sorry. I had strep and so I wasn't available. And I heard you had a great time with Drew though.
Yes, I did. And no worries at all. I'm hoping you're feeling better. Strep is no fun. But yes, we did have fun. And we also had fun in Vegas the week before. So yeah, things are good. Things are hectic in your world, it sounds like.
Yes. I'm not going to talk about it though.
Then we're gonna roll right on. Today on the show, we have Bobby Lee Hartman, the founder of Rails Camp USA. Bobby Lee, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I'll introduce myself. So I've been running tech community events for a really long time, even before Rails Camp. And so I kind of have always been in the Rails community, and that was the first language that I learned. But I was a full-time Ruby on Rails engineer for a long time. And then in 2019, I switched into developer relations. So yeah, I've been doing a bunch of different things in tech. But Rails Camp, I started in 2014 officially. And through kind of, I'll tell you guys in a minute, like how it all started. I live in Seattle now with my dog, and I love trail running, backcountry skiing. And that's kind of what I do outside of tech stuff.
Very cool. So I have known about Rails Camp for a while. So I graduated college in 2018. So 2018, I was looking for like conferences, and Rails Camp has always been, even like in the podcast that I'd listened to over the years, like going way, way as far back as I could, it has always been like this mythical thing that everyone has nothing but great things to say about it. And I want to know what we're missing. So can you just, before we get into the history and everything, can you just kind of break down like the Rails Camp experience?
So it's typically, I'll just talk about the US because Australia is a little bit different. They're a bit larger and I don't know all the logistics that are covered with the ticket. So essentially you purchase a ticket online, you go to the airport and there's always a bus there provided to pick everyone up. So everybody kind of is chatting on Slack to make sure they can find each other at the airport. And then the bus picks everyone up and it'll stop on the way to grab anything that you might need that you forgot. So there's always kind of a grocery store stop. And then once you get there, there's goodie bags, t-shirts, all the fun stuff. And then we have like a happy hour kind of thing just for people to kind of get to know each other, check into their cabins. It's usually shared lodging. So it, think of it as a classic summer camp that people went to maybe when they're little or their kids are going to now. Bunk beds. There's always like a room someone can book out themselves, like private rooms, or if you just want two people in your cabin or you're bringing friends, you can arrange to stay in a cabin with them and book the whole cabin for just you and your friends. So sometimes people do that. Sometimes people also bring their team if they're remote and they don't get to meet up that often. So yeah, so cabins, that's kind of how that's set up. And then meals are typically all together. So then we'll all kind of have dinners together and the first night introduce everyone. Introduce sponsors, and then I'll kind of talk about the agenda for the week, which is always open for anyone to do whatever they want. So it's pretty much single track in a way, but there's not like, okay, here's the next thing. And then there's 10 things to do that are set up. It's kind of like the summer camp will have different activities every year. So camp kind of changes every year because that's a big thing. I don't use the same venue every year. I always change it up. That's why a lot of people come back and it keeps it fun and fresh for me and for people. So pretty much every day is just, there's an unconference kind of going on. So some folks can work on, maybe they're practicing a conference talk or they want to discuss things. So that's kind of a flexible side of camp that's really casual. And up to every year it changes. Some people are really into doing that and thinking of different things to talk about and presenting different things. Or it's just playing outside, doing all the activities that summer camps have to offer, which will be swimming, hiking. We'll set up rock climbing sometimes for people if they want to pay extra for rock climbing lessons. There's mountain biking this year. There's a zip line. So just like swimming, kayaking, the whole kind of cliche summer camp. We did a kickball competition last year, like canoe racing and fun stuff like that. So those are kind of your options. You can do whatever you want every day. And you can also relax. Some people come and they actually bring a rental car and they go nearby to a hike that's a little bit further and they'll bring a few people with them. It's kind of a choose your own adventure, if you will. The first couple of years I had code retreats. So I had someone come in and plan an actual code retreat where they're pairing on different things. But everyone should know that there's no Wi-Fi at camp and there's no cell reception at these venues. So that's also why it's different too. People use it as a time to unplug. Some people don't bring their computers at all. Some people pair or they'll talk on Slack before, like, hey, who knows this language or who knows something about this? We can talk about it. So it's 3 days typically of that. It's just playing outside, getting to know each other. And then on the last day, we'll have kind of a hiring fair, which is really cool. It's really authentic. So people just kind of sit around a campfire and talk about if they're looking for a job or if they are hiring and like if they like their company or not, things that they are looking for. They write a bunch of different languages and certain different roles they're looking for. So that's always been a really cool and valuable thing. A lot of people hire one another from camp if they have a dev shop or if they're a CTO somewhere. Yeah. So it's kind of this intermix thing that's where the networking kind of all comes together too, is that last day. So yeah. And then everyone just takes the bus back together and stays in touch on Slack throughout the year. It's a pretty active community. They post jobs in Slack and they talk throughout the year, like what conference are we going to do here and stuff like that. So that's kind of the overall community and events kind of that's going on.
I have several questions, but first, Julie and I are South Park fans. Are you a South Park fan by any chance?
I've seen it, but not like a super fan or anything.
Julie, have you ever seen the episode, I Should Have Never Gone Ziplining?
Yes, I have seen that one.
When you said ziplining, that was the first thing that came through. I'm sorry, I had to get that out of my body.
No, it's okay.
Okay, so I didn't realize that there aren't actually like talks. Playing outside sounds so fun right now.
Yeah, it's a different conference in that way. I actually had fireside chats, so I'll have people that are already coming to camp and I know that they're up to really cool and interesting things, or they already are famous in the tech community. And I'll be like, hey, I know I'd love to do a fireside chat with you. So I might pick that back up. It just kind of has shifted every year depending on what time I have to arrange that. But yeah, it's not your classic conference where there's a set agenda with speakers, time slots. It's really a flexible, make your own kind of thing go on, happen with the unconference style and the outdoorsy stuff going on. And there's puzzles and games and stuff like that. If you're not active or they have mobility issues, there's a lot of that built into.
I'm sorry, I just have to bring us back to the South Park thing. I feel like you have to kind of explain why the ziplining.
I've been to things exactly like you're talking about, Bobby Lee, like camps. Even I used to go on Groupon because I'm a cheapskate. So I would go on Groupon and find like camps that are like not in season. So it's like really dirt cheap. You can go stay in a cabin and they have all of the same stuff that you can do normally during the summer, but off season. So I've done all sorts of stuff like that. I've gone ziplining a bunch. The thing with ziplining is... it's never as awesome as you think it's going to be. And that was kind of the joke of the show, was that they kept getting to like a zip lining and they're like, it's really not that fun. And then the camp counselor was like, all right, guys, on to the next one. And it's just this progresses of them trying to like leave this group, but it's just a whole thing. But being outside is fun. So you've been doing this since 2014, right? What's kind of like the history? How's it kind of evolved over the years?
Well, the big thing that is different between me and some other Rails camps in Australia is I have been the sole organizer every year. So that's kind of always been the same, but locations have changed. Sponsorship has changed as well. It's a lot of past attendees sponsoring. So that's been really cool. So everybody just keeps coming back and supporting new folks coming. And that scholarship program has been consistent every year and providing spots to folks who can't afford to go. So that's been something that's evolved over time, like who's supporting it. I don't know. I guess it's always been kind of consistently the same things are pretty much offered. For me as an organizer, it's become more expensive to run this event too, because I book out the entire venue. We never share it with other people. It's typically always on a private lake, not really next to other properties. So it really feels like a private experience. So those are hard to find. Those are kind of maybe other things that you might have questions for on later of what it's like to plan it. But yeah, that's kind of been evolved. It's always changing locations. I've kept that consistent. I've come back to certain states more than once, but I'll never repeat a venue.
What made you decide to spin up one for the US?
Basically, I had been, you guys ever, I think it was called Nerd Ranch. It was by a tech company and it was.
Sounds very familiar.
I know. It was like by a really big tech company back in the day. And I always was like, oh my gosh. And it wasn't what I thought it was. I thought it was like a place you go to where you can just check out and work on a side project. So that was something that I was like, maybe I'll buy like this lodge. I'm really obsessed with lodges and that kind of experience being in the woods. And so I was like, maybe I can rent this place out or do something. So that was kind of the really, really initial thoughts about this whole thing. But a lot of friends, myself included, that just we couldn't find the time to work on our side projects and coding related side projects. And so I had been talking to someone about the Big Nerd Ranch is what it was called. And they were like, that's not what it is. And I was like, okay, that's still not what I'm thinking. And then as I was talking about this at a conference, someone actually at a Rails comp, someone introduced me to the folks in Australia running Rails Camp. And they were like, this sounds a little similar to kind of what you're thinking. Maybe just see what they're doing and if they need help or what's going on there. And so then they were like, maybe just make the US, after talking to them for a while, like they just said, make the US version of it. Someone started it on the East Coast, maybe like 10 years prior to you, and they only did it once. And I don't even remember who it was. That's what they said. And so I just was like, okay, cool. No one owns Rails Camp in general, but I wanted to make it as similar to Australia's as I could. But I bring in a lot less people. I think they have about 150 people the last time I talked to someone about it. And they have new organizers every year. So I just kept it kind of consistent with like capping it at 50 people, letting in about 15 more on the wait list, depending on the year and what the size of the venue is. And then I just kind of changed little things here and there, like keeping it unplugged, keeping the food pretty good if I can. Sometimes the venues, it just depends on the year. But yeah, now I'm bringing in private chef and stuff. So all that's been cleaned up. I'm not taking a risk on food.
Hi there, Julie here. I would like to take a moment to thank GoReels for sponsoring this episode. When I was first starting out, I struggled with finding up-to-date content to help me level up. Then I learned about GoReels. Not only does GoReels provide new screencasts weekly, they also have two fantastic instructors that break down complex topics into digestible chunks. On top of that, I really appreciate when they explain the whys behind the subject. One of my favorite walkthroughs is creating your first Ruby gem from scratch. What a great way to learn by stripping down to just the basics. If you care about leveling up as a Ruby engineer, you can't go wrong with GoReels. Check it out at GoReels.com.
How much time do you think you spend planning Rails Camp per year?
It depends on the year. It depends if I can't decide on what state I'm going to do it in. I used to have this everything ready before the last day of the event, and I could announce the next location at the event, but that's just not realistic for me that much anymore. So it takes a lot of time. Once I find the venue, though, and I've got all of that set up, the logistics, that can take maybe a couple months, depending on what, if I'm traveling to it, if I'm figuring out different logistics with the venue. Let's just say that takes about a couple months, including visiting it and everything. And then after that, when I launch it and get the site all ready and everything, that takes maybe like a week to get kind of things all set, their emails ready, prepared, and then sending out and then posting a bunch of different things. And then after that, it's just kind of the initial about 30 tickets kind of sell within the first couple of weeks. And then after that, I just kind of post here and there on Twitter and on LinkedIn now, because a lot of people are on LinkedIn a lot more than Twitter. So yeah, just kind of consistently kind of posting it, doing some DMs and messages to folks that have been before, reminding them, or new people that I think are really cool that I think would be a good fit that follow the Twitter account. Just kind of messaging people, being more personal touch like that has really helped over the years. And then promoting the scholarship program and doing that'll be something I just continue doing after a lot of tickets have been sold. So that can take some time too. But maybe just like an hour a week after it's been launched.
What do you think are like the unique types of benefits to this style of conference?
I'd say the small size is really beneficial for the, first of all, there's a lot of people who have different communication styles. So if they're introverted, extroverted, there's ways that I build in this community that is not cheesy networking. It's not like a classic happy hour meetup you're going to. There's ways that I build in community building throughout the experience, you know, talking on Slack before camp, like encouraging people to, and then they get on the bus and they're kind of texting and on Slack and where should we meet at this? Should we go to this bar? We can meet before the bus. So that's built in, and all these little small groups, it starts getting bigger as you get to camp. You know, walk around the grocery store. What are you going to grab some snacks? Or, you know, so that stuff's all kind of built in this bonding experience. That's different than a conference. No one's on their computer. No one's really, they're on their computer if they're doing some sort of unconference part of the event. But in general, at dinners, they're on their phone. That's the biggest thing is people are not looking down and they're engaging in a different way. They become fast friends a lot faster than at a normal conference. Yeah, I just find the friendships and people talking outside of the event. You know, I see them talking on Twitter. Some people have gotten married. Some people have like new best friends and they travel together. There's just like all these really cool things. And some people bring kids now too. So that's a different experience than they can maybe do at a conference. I allow free nanny support. I won't provide a nanny, but if they want to bring one, then I don't charge that person for their ticket. They can stay in their cabin or they can camp or do whatever they want at the venue. So yeah, making kind of experiences really open to a lot of different folks in different phases of their life has been pretty cool to evolve camp as well. That's evolved, actually, to answer your question before. And then the outdoorsy pieces of it, you know, I've seen 5Ks at RailsConf and at RubyConf, some 5Ks built in. So I love that, the activity part in the morning, getting people to do some activities and plan stuff. People just seem so happy and refreshed. That's kind of different because at big conferences, you're in cities that took you a while to get there. There's so many logistics of travel and trying to find a restaurant to go to with your team, checking your phone constantly. When's the next talk I want to go to? I mean, there's like so many things. So yeah, that's kind of all of these.
I've always been hesitant about going to Rails Camp because I'm one very anxious around attending something that I'm not super familiar with or don't know anybody. What can you tell somebody who's kind of like in my shoes if they're kind of hesitating on whether they should go or not?
So there's always a lot of new people that come alone. I'd say 90% are people not coming with a friend. So just know that a lot of people are, especially because the scholarship program's like almost half of the amount of tickets that are sold from people just signing up. So those are people are always new. So yeah, there's always just a lot of new people there. So, and then the people that know one another, it seems like, oh, well, if people keep returning, then it would be super clicky. It's not in that way because everyone is so excited with the new people that are coming. And since there's all these different planned activities that they can do. You can do like archery in a small group, and then everything's kind of in these little tiny groups. I think that's good for people that are new as well, because it's not like, yeah, you're just going, everything's done with everybody at once. You know what I'm saying? It's not always like this group of 50 people for every activity. It's all these little small groups, which I think has been good for people that are new and intimidated by big group things or big happy hours. Again, like I've described in the past at conferences, I'm afraid to go to big conferences, going to all the booths and talking to people. And I kind of meet people that way, or go to the small dinners for women or the speaker dinners, right? It's all these little small experiences, small group settings that I find that to be more approachable for people that are new. So I kind of have tried to design it in that way to have like, you can only put 8 people in the group for kayaking this morning and you can do it again the next day. So making sure everybody can do it again. You know, I mean, I'll repeat stuff each day so people can do all the different stuff. So yeah, and then the shared cabins are small group setting too. And there's opportunity for just 2 people or 4 people or something too, if you're new and you don't want to share something. And then camping is always allowed as well. If you totally can't afford a private cabin, camping is the cheapest ticket. So that's a private experience too.
It just sounds like so much planning has to be involved in doing something like this. There's like so many different opportunities for different folks. And the experience that I've heard from folks that have gone, and they absolutely love it. And I don't know how you do it. It's like you must have been awesome. A travel planner in your past life or something.
Yeah, I know. I do some travel planning now, but I find that to be so different than this. I think I just get really into making it a cool experience and finding the new place. I think that's also why I like finding new venues for me as a planner too. But that obviously is a lot of work by planning it in a new place every year. There's new partners I'm working with. I try to find a t-shirt designer for camp t-shirts in each state. So I'm not using the same stuff for almost anything, except for some of the apothecary and the goodie bag stuff that I put into the goodie bags. That's kind of a repeat, consistent thing that I have going on. But yeah, it is a lot of work. I think I just love the community and they're so excited about it that it just gets me like wanting to put something on really rad for people that they want to come back to. So that's kind of, I think, what drives me to make it just seem like it's not that many logistics, and I just kind of do it.
Have you ever felt like you wanted to stop doing this?
Well, for COVID, I actually had to take a 2-year break because the venues weren't really hosting and that people didn't really feel safe going because so much of it is shared in a way. So that was nice. I think the anxiety I carry throughout the year is like, okay, where's the next place? Where's it going to be? And once I have that, then the anxiety about everything just really subsides. But yeah, I think coming out of COVID and being like, okay, here, I'm going to do this again. It was like a big thought, like, should I, because I do work full time outside of running this. So that's been a thought kind of, that was the first time I was like, okay, maybe I'll do this every other year, but maybe people won't show up. So that kind of scares me. So now I'm kind of wanting to do it even more. Like I want to do it on the East Coast in the winter and maybe help folks open these in different countries. That's been kind of on my radar since recently, since October, I've been running events full time for my own business outside of Rails Camp's one of the events I plan, but I do other like company offsites and stuff. So now it's kind of, I'm really focusing on it and getting a project manager to help me really organize everything repeatable. So maybe I won't have to be the planner every year. Yeah. So those are ways of being able to manage it moving forward.
What do you get out of Rails Camp?
I'd say the community is huge. And that's kind of why I also started seeking ways to communicate with engineers outside of work. I felt when I was first starting in as an engineer, I was junior for a while. And so I just felt like I wasn't talking in meetings. I wasn't really able to contribute a lot because I felt I wasn't advanced enough as a developer. So I still love the piece of it. That's the original reason why I wanted to talk more. I wanted to meet more people. I loved going to different things, but I felt that I was missing the outdoor touch to some of the stuff. So I think I love finding the new locations. I love, seeing everybody every year, finding different goodie bag stuff. I love finding partnerships and different sponsors to work with and how I can help sponsors promote their roles and jobs that they're hiring for or their software products or APIs they want people to try out and use. I love doing that. Yeah. It's a really good way to stay a part of the community. You know, as life gets busier, I'm not going to meetups as much anymore. Big conferences are a little overwhelming for me and expensive. So I like having this as kind of my way to stay in touch with everyone.
Yo, quick question for you. Do you want higher clarity into production, but don't have the time to become a wizard in observability? Honey Badger Insights is exactly what you need. Forget the old school trio of logs, metrics, and traces. We're talking structured events that don't just sit there. They're your treasure map to solving mysteries in your app. With Honey Badger, sling your logs and events into the mix and voila, you just unlock the power of Honey Badger's new query language, BadgerQL. It's like having a conversation with your data. Ask it anything, turn mishaps into metrics, and showcase your wins on dashboards that even the marketing team will drool over. And guess what? This isn't just for big spenders. Honey Badger's got you covered with a free plan that packs a punch, including error tracking, uptime monitoring, sleek status pages, and more. Oh, and speaking of errors, Honey Badger treats them like VIPs at the club. With Insights and BadgerQL, your errors aren't just problems, they're opportunities. Explore your data in ways you didn't think were possible and get the insights that you deserve. Check out honeybadger.io. That's right, honeybadger.io. I liked earlier, going back a little bit, when you were talking about having these small groups, these planned activities, and making it so that everyone's included. I was just in Vegas, and I said on the last episode that we did, I was like, I didn't actually have the capacity in me to attend the conference. I just wanted to go hang out with my friends in Vegas. So I just drove over.
Yeah.
And I was like trying to think about why, but you kind of nailed part of why. It's like, it's taxing. It's a lot. And one thing I was thinking about was like at these smaller conferences, a lot of us know each other. And I'm like, when everyone starts splitting out for dinners and stuff at the end, I'm like, I hope someone's not getting left behind, or like if someone wants to do something. How do you kind of think about like that inclusivity and like making sure that no one's left out of these things?
So all meals are together. So no one really leaves campus. So that's a good question. I forgot to mention is everything single track in that way, you know, the main stuff, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then I always, after each meal or at each gathering that we have, I'm kind of the moderator, being like, okay, here's a board. You can put your names on that. Here's different things that are going to happen. So making sure I'm watching to see if, I just always am kind of watching, you know, is there people kind of in the corner? Maybe they're not really engaging as much. And I always have also a couple people in the group that I have them help me watch for that as well. So I'm kind of having some friends that, there's people that always come. I'm like, hey, can everyone just be aware that it doesn't ever become clicky or everyone feels kind of engaged? And if they aren't very active, making sure that they know where the room is or people are playing games, or if people don't want to stay up late, making sure they don't think they have to drink with people who are doing karaoke. You know, there's always this other group of people that are totally doing casual things and playing games, puzzles, all that. That's kind of making sure there's room for people to do their own thing and making sure that we're all kind of watching and making, you know, that people aren't kind of sitting out, or if they miss a few meals, I have their information, can figure out what cabin they're in or checking on things.
Have we talked about where it's going to be this year yet?
I launched it a few weeks ago. It's in Idaho. So it'll be about 2 hours outside of Boise, Idaho. It's in Cascade, Idaho, which is not really known for anything, but it's at this huge summer camp. That's one of the best summer camps in Idaho, which basically means they have probably the most activities, and it's on a private no wake lake. So there's people that can camp on this lake, but it's not bustling with boats and a bunch of traffic. So I really sought hard to find that in Idaho, which is pretty hard. and becoming harder for me to find just in general on the West Coast is more of these private areas. So that's kind of why it's there specifically in Idaho. And we did do Idaho a few years ago. I think the second year of that I ran Rails Camp, I did it in Idaho. And it was the most favorite of everyone because this venue had kayaks and stand up paddle boards and all that just at the beach at any time. So that was like a super fun idea. So I wanted to replicate that going back here. And then I really also want to do whitewater rafting. So I'm looking for a sponsor to help put that on, or I'm going to have it as an add-on to tickets. If people just want to do a half day, I can arrange it, but they would have to, you know, pay $100 or something. So it's pretty affordable actually as an add-on activity.
Yeah. I know someone listening to this has money. Yo, call your boss and let's get whitewater rafting on the board because that would be sick.
Yeah, we did it before. It was like super memorable for everybody. And that's kind of a fun way for a sponsor to get involved because it's some of these like really impactful, tangible memories that would be attached to their name, which I always find to be more impactful for a conference sponsor than just sponsoring like, I don't know, snacks or something.
I agree. I mean, yeah. Honey Badger does a booth at Rails Conf, or they don't do a booth. They have like couches and it's like a hangout area.
Yeah.
And I love that because it's not like, oh, I went to the Honey Badger booth. It's like, oh, I went and hung out with the Honey Badger people. It's like, oh, Honey Badger sent me whitewater rafting. It's like, those are the cool experiences that you remember. And then when you remember later, when you're like, oh, that company sent me whitewater rafting. I'm going to vie for them.
Yeah. Same thing with when I did a canoe race, I had someone sponsor the prizes for the canoe race winners. And so that kind of thing is really cool.
Have you ever done it in Arizona?
No, I haven't actually. I was trying to find places with more water. Colorado was pretty hard to find a place actually. There's a lot of hiking there and everything, but the lakes are kind of small where the summer camps are.
Right.
But Arizona is a good idea. Utah, I've wanted to try. Wyoming, Utah. Yeah, Arizona, New Mexico. Haven't done those yet.
Probably the top corner of Arizona, right near Utah, there's a humongous, I don't know what the body of water is called. I was just up there though. There's tons of boats out. It's beautiful. I just want someone to do a conference in Arizona so I don't have to fly for once.
Yeah.
I'm just so odd at how you find these venues. Like, do you just, I don't know, point your finger at some state and then be like, okay, I'm going to go find a lake in the state? Or like, what's your process? Exactly. As soon as you're done with one Rails camp, how do you decide on your next venue?
I think when I'm deciding, it's like, you know, what have I not done in the past? So I have some few states I haven't done. So that would be kind of the first thing. But if from scratch, I have a lot of lists that I've saved over the years when I was like obsessively looking for different summer camps and just saving them wherever they were all over the US. So that I have this list, like an Airtable kind of spreadsheet. And then I'll go there first. And then there are summer camp directories for parents looking for summer camps to send their kids to. So I'll look in that and you can sort it by state. And then some of them say on waterfront, but some of those filters are kind of not really working. So I just keep it pretty simple and start with just the state. And if they allow overnight guests. And then from there, we'll kind of go into Google Maps and do some more research in certain areas. And once I get the names of them, you know, from that state, for example, I'll get on Google Maps and make sure that check out their property, see if it's near anything else, see if it's near water or hiking, sort of what kind of activities, because you want to keep people pretty busy for 3 days. They're not going to leave campus really. So I'll kind of do some digging like that, make sure that it's somewhat unplugged. It's getting harder to do. So cell reception at least very spotty at the venue. If they have some of it, it's making sure it's spotty and that the ability to turn the Wi-Fi off. So for emergencies, just so everyone knows, there's typically always Wi-Fi at a summer camp and there's always landline phones because they're dealing with youth and everything. So I'm not bringing people to super sketchy, random, like middle of nowhere places. And always making sure within, you know, less than 2.5 hours from an airport. So that narrows down the list as well. And finding, make sure the buildings have enough space for people to spread out. So it's not just everyone in one room, the entire event, making sure there's some sort of cozy-ish couch or some sort of something that's a little bit more lounging because a lot of summer camps are just like cafeterias and that's the only building they have. So, you know, making sure there's more to the venue. So there's can be a quiet group, like I said, staying up late, this like doing karaoke, or there's people that can go play games and there's lights on in that building as well to stay up or whatever. So that's kind of something I look at when I do a venue tour.
This is coming up almost 10 years now. What are some of the most memorable moments of the past 10 years for you?
there's just been some random cool places that we've gone. So kind of some memorable places is one camp at a lake. We had, it was on a river, but it wasn't on a lake. So at one point the bus took us, the summer camp had these vans. So we took these vans to this really cool remote lake where people could jump off these little cliffs and swim and kayak, because they brought all the stuff with us as well, like kayaks, stand-up paddle boards. It was kind of this like flotilla that everyone calls it, the flotilla. It was like people had guitars out there. They had, it was just like an all-day water day, which I thought was so cool on this private lake. And there weren't any other hikers. You know, I mean, it was in the summer too. It was in California. So it's just cool to find places like that. Like, we're just so not used to that, going anywhere hiking. I'm from Seattle, so hiking anywhere within 2 hours of the city, there's always other groups. So that was just kind of a cool, memorable experience. And then one year we had this summer camp that had, it wasn't a zip line, but it was like this swing, like a giant swing in the woods. And we all went out there at like, I don't know, 8 p.m. and thought that would be a super fun idea. So that was a super memorable day. It was this giant swing that we all did that was like, you know, in the woods, like we felt like flying squirrels, just like, stuff like that. You know, it's just things that I remember. One year, I think the first year, someone made like a mini little tiki bar in his rental car, trunk of his rental car. He was like doing little, making little cocktails and stuff, little mixology, because he was a developer and a mixologist. So stuff like that's kind of been randomly happening. Yeah, some of the code retreats have been really cool, like everybody pairing on different things and projects that have come out of that and hiring that has come out of those as well, you know, pairing with people. So yeah, I think those are some of my favorite memories. Yeah.
What do you want to leave people with? Yeah. I've got the gist, right? Okay. Sounds awesome. Okay. Sounds totally fun. I can tell that you're on top of it. Like, you're thinking of things that major conferences I've been to haven't thought of. I know it's going to be a ton of fun. So what do you want to leave people with who are like, maybe they didn't know it existed, or maybe they didn't know, they didn't know it was still going on? What do you want to leave them with?
Yeah, I guess it's for people that are kind of looking for something a little bit different than going to big conferences. And I know that people go to conferences for work and finding different workshops and progressing in their learning. But I do think there's still this big group of people that do what you were saying, Andrew, is like the hallway track, kind of going to conferences and meeting people. And so if you're wanting something that's like logistically pretty simple, you just have to get to the airport and everything's taken care of, you know, meals included, activities, lodging, and everything, that's kind of the experience it is. And if you just want to go to some really cool places and go hiking, and you don't have to plan this trip at all, you know, essentially I plan where all the hikes that you can go to, hot springs, anything that's kind of near the venue, has all been logistically planned. So yeah, something simple like that, where you're meeting other people in tech. And if you want to do some cool vacation with you and your partner, a lot of people will do that too. And if you want to bring your kids and do something cool, because these are summer camps for kids, so they have stuff that's cool for kids. So those are the kind of people, if they're interested, love to have you this year. We've got a lot of tickets in different types of cabins, a private cabin, 4-person cabins. You can camp, something for everyone.
That sounds so fun. I was supposed to do it last week, but I couldn't because of my neck, but that sounds like a ton of fun.
Yeah. And sponsors too, if people are interested in sending their team. You don't have to attend if you're sponsoring. You can just support someone on the scholarship list, but yeah, if you want to come and meet different people and have your sponsorship go a little further, people remember you a little bit more, even just sending one person is fun too.
How much is it to like sponsor someone to go?
Sponsorship starts at $800, and that supports someone's tickets and their bus to camp and all food and activities. And then it goes all the way up to presenting sponsor, which is $7,500. I'm putting sponsorship towards kind of everything this year. It's not just, I used to have them labeled as like, this is for whitewater rafting and this is for this. But now it kind of supports like everything that goes into planning it. But the money typically always goes for scholarship programs. And once the scholarship programs are set, then it'll go towards whitewater rafting, or it'll go towards t-shirts and the designer I need to hire to design the t-shirts, stuff like that. So that's kind of what it's for. And then if you want to be a presenting sponsor, there's a lot more of me promoting your position or positions that you're hiring for, or promoting your APIs or software product, for example. I'll embed that more into some emails to folks in the community, not just posts like saying, hey, thanks on Twitter. There's more that goes into that. I'm in helping people with whatever they need.
Come to Rails Camp. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Bobby Lee. It was great to meet you. You are a legend in the community, whether you know that or not, thanks because so much. I have known of you for a long time. And I was oh my God, so Bobby Lee just DM'd me. So I think I literally texted that to Julie. So thank you for coming on the show. I hope Rails Camp continues to be a great success. And
thank you.
I think we'll wrap it up here. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll catch you back here, same time, same great place. Bye.
Bye everyone.